Today we look at Adam Smith's theory of growth. Smith begins The Wealth of Nations with a discussion of the division of labor. And it's appropriate for us to begin there as well, because the division of labor was absolutely central to Smith's thought. Indeed, you could say that he was consumed by this idea. Why? Well, Smith gives his famous example of the pin factory. He says that 10 people working separately could produce maybe 20 pins each, or 200 in a day, all total. But in a modern pin factory, modern for Smith, with a division of labor, that is where one man draws out the wire, another straightens it, a third cuts it, and so forth, and machines to work with, to the invention of which the same division of labor has probably given occasion, the same 10 people can produce 48,000 pins in a day. Is it any wonder that Smith was consumed by this idea, by the division of labor increasing productivity by more than 200 times? It's for this reason that Smith thought that increasing the division of labor was absolutely critical to generating economic growth. Let's take a closer look. So why does the division of labor increase productivity? Smith gives us three reasons. First, the savings of time, as workers no longer have to move from one task to the other task to the other task. Reduction of setup costs. That's probably more one of the more minor reasons. Second, dexterity in education. As workers specialize in a task, they learn the best way to do that task. They get deeper and deeper into the tacit knowledge, into the secrets, if you like, the best ways of doing that task. This is what we would call learning by doing. You learn a lot more by doing the task repeatedly. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, the invention of machines. So Smith says, workers who specialize in a task will naturally come to think of ways of doing that task with less labor. So there's a lot of inventions of common workmen which are important. Even more important is the ingenuity of the makers of the machines, because the division of labor is not just within a factory, it's across industries. So we get whole industries which are built on providing machines for other industries, and the workers in those industries learn how to improve the machines, which improves the productivity of the workers who use the machines. So Smith gives us this quote. He says, "In the progress of society, philosophy or speculation," and here he means what we would today call research and development. So R&D becomes like every other employment, the principal or sole trade and occupation of a particular class of citizens. And like every other employment too, it is subdivided into a great number of branches. Each individual becomes more expert in his own peculiar branch. More work is done upon the whole, and the quantity of science is considerably increased by it. So in our textbook, Modern Principles, Tyler and I give the example of doctors. We don't just have doctors today. We have specialists. We have specialists in the feet. We have specialists in the heart. We have cancer specialists. We have brain surgeons. We have psychologists. We have many, many different types of physicians specializing in a particular branch of knowledge. And in this way, the total sum of human knowledge can be vastly increased beyond that which could be held by any single human mind. So we use our minds, we use our powers of our brains as a society much, much more when we divide tasks, specialize in labor, and increase the total sum of human knowledge which is being effectively used. So what makes the division of labor possible? It's trade. It's the power of exchanging. A shoemaker, for example, will not specialize in making shoes unless he expects that he'll be able to trade the product of his labor, the shoes, for all the other goods, for the shelter, for the clothing, for the food that he needs. So if you want to increase the division of labor, you've got to find a way to extend trade even further. So let's look at how we can extend trade, how we can make trade easier. What did Adam Smith say about extending trade? So how does one increase trade and the division of labor to get advantage of those productivity improvements? First, larger markets, or as Smith put it, the division of labor is limited by the extent of the market. Large markets increase, for example, the incentive to specialize. In a small town, we don't find ear, nose, and throat specialists because there aren't enough other people who need those services to justify someone specializing in that field. As a result, in a small town, you don't get specialization and you don't get improvements in knowledge in that field. For that, you have to go to a much larger town where it makes sense for people to specialize because there are more demanders of that service. Similarly, larger markets increase the incentive to invest in machines. If you're only going to be producing a few hundred pins, it doesn't make sense to build a pin factory. If you're only going to be producing a few loaves of bread, you make them at home. If you're going to be producing thousands of loaves of bread, you build an entire bread factory, which massively increases productivity, which lowers your costs per unit. So what makes for larger markets? Smith gives a number of possibilities. Trust and good government, free trade, geography, sort of exogenous factors like seacoasts, as well as cities, and the system of natural liberty. We'll look at each one of these in turn. Finally, another factor to increase trade and the division of labor, capital accumulation. Let's take a look at larger markets in more detail. People won't trade with one another if they don't trust the other party. So trust is a big factor, a cultural factor, which can underlie trade. Adam Smith talks more about this in the Theory of Moral Sentiments. How do you generate goodwill among men? How do you generate trust? How do you get peace? Also, important is justice, and here government can play a role. So Smith says, commerce and manufacturers, in short, can seldom flourish in any state in which there is not a certain degree of confidence in the justice of government. And what he means by justice in this context is security of property, both from the government itself and from foreign invaders, including peace, the enforcement of contracts, including debt contracts and labor contracts, and the rule of law. That is, there should not be arbitrary taxation or arbitrary confiscation of property. Smith kind of sums up. He says, little else is requisite to carry a state to the highest degree of opulence from the lowest barbarism, but peace, easy taxes, and a tolerable administration of justice, all the rest being brought about by the natural course of things. Smith, of course, was a famous proponent of free trade and an opponent of mercantilism. He was against cartels, he was against tariffs, he was against subsidies, and so forth. And he said that the way to create the best manufacturing nation, the strongest merchants of your own, is to grant the most perfect freedom of trade to all other nations. Now, why did he say this? Again, it's the division of labor which Smith wants to increase. Through international specialization, we get a greater division of labor, we get greater incentives to invest in research and development, we get more learning by doing, and we get greater improvements in productivity, lowering of cost, greater wealth, and so forth. Smith made contributions not just to economic theory, but also to economic history, and in a way which supports, which gives evidence for his theory. So Smith says, look around the world. Where is it that civilization begins? He says it begins on seacoasts and navigable rivers. Why? He says, as by means of water carriage, ship and boat, a more extensive market is open to every sort of industry than what land carriage alone can afford it. So it is upon the seacoast and along the banks of navigable rivers that industry of every kind naturally begins to subdivide and improve. Smith is saying it's much cheaper to carry goods across the water than it is to carry them across the land. Because of this, along seacoasts and navigable rivers, you get potentially much larger markets. Because you have larger markets, you get specialization. Because of specialization, you get development of knowledge, you get investments in machinery, investments in research and development. That means you get improvements, lowering of cost. So this is where civilization begins. It begins where larger markets are possible, where you get more and more trade. So we have here a dynamic theory of growth, which explains some of the origins of a civilization and also explains, as Smith goes on, why landlocked countries where growth is much slower to occur. And for more on that, I recommend taking a look at our videos on growth and development and trade in our course on development economics. Liberty is also important for growth because liberty allows for self-interest. And in the right circumstances, self-interest leads to the social good, the invisible hand process. So Smith says, given freedom and security, the natural effort of every individual to better his own condition is so powerful a principle that it is alone and without any assistance, not only capable of carrying on the society to wealth and prosperity, but of surmounting 100 impertinent obstructions which the folly of human laws too often encumbers its operations. Quite so. Capital accumulation also plays a role in increasing the division of labor, because to employ the labor in the factory and to buy the machines with which the workers will work, there must be previous accumulation, must be previous savings. So Smith says labor can be more and more subdivided in proportion only as stock is previously more and more accumulated. He goes on to say there's a two-step process, however, because self-interest will in fact encourage the capitalist to do precisely this, to divide labor. So the person who employs his stock in maintaining labor necessarily wishes to employ it in such a manner as to produce as great a quantity of work as possible. He endeavors, therefore, both to make among his workmen the most proper distribution of employment, subdivide labor, and so forth, and to furnish them with the best machines which he can either invent or afford to purchase. So capital accumulation and the division of labor go together. With the division of labor, you get more output. With more output, there's more savings. With more savings, you can subdivide and specialize labor and buy machines and so forth. To summarize, Smith argued that increases in labor and capital productivity were driven by the greater division of labor, by specialization, in particular by learning by doing and by investment in new technologies. The greater division of labor was brought about by increases in capital accumulation and by larger markets, both of which had a policy component, a policy lever. Namely, increases in trust and good government could get you more capital accumulation and larger markets. Similarly, good was a policy of free trade and promoting the system of natural liberty. If I had to evaluate the theory, I'd say Smith put too much weight on those extraordinary productivity improvements he saw at the pin factory. In more ordinary circumstances, we wouldn't expect productivity improvements quite that large. And I would say he underemphasized exogenous improvements in productivity brought about by science and new technologies and so forth. Nevertheless, this is a very impressive and dynamic theory, and Smith put his finger on a key idea, namely that the division of labor increases productivity. For further resources, most obviously Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, Alun Young has a classic paper from 1928 on increasing returns and economic progress, which developed a number of Smithian insights. James Buchanan and Yang Yun have an important paper, A Smithian Perspective on Increasing Returns. Also take a look at another course, our course on development economics, has a video, Geography and Development Trade, which looks at the problem of landlocked nations and growth and further develops the Smithian versus the Ricardian perspective on trade. The video on Paul Romer may also be useful. Romer's work on growth can be understood as a somewhat distant descendant, but certainly as a descendant of Adam Smith's views on growth. Our textbook, Modern Principles, the chapter on trade, looks at some of these Smithian arguments in more detail than is done in most other textbooks, as opposed to just focusing on the Ricardian comparative advantage argument. And my TED talk focuses on the incentives for research and development which are created by larger markets and the importance of globalization in stimulating research and development. Thanks.